Are you looking for a musical conversation with substance? Inclusive, with hosts just like you? Well, we have you covered. Welcome to the Music Challenge Podcast. Sit back and relax. I'm Andrew with Jake, Kevin, and Rob, and we're sharing our favorite top shelf albums. Come for the music and stay for the conversation. And welcome to the Music Challenge Podcast. My name is Andrew, and we're here tonight checking out one of the albums that I cut my teeth on and is a part of me, and that is Alive One by Phish. Their first live album from their own multi-track recordings. And I'm excited as hell to talk about the band and the album, and I'm sure my cast and crew is as well. Kevin, you're the first one I will introduce. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right, thanks. You know, it's it feels like we are kind of hitting the end of summer, beginning of fall stuff. The weather's still nice, so I'm taking advantage of that and trying to get outside and stay outside as much as possible. Kind of preparing for Rocktober next month, but ringing what's left out of this month. Really nice outside. Loving the outdoor time and all that kind of stuff. How about you, Andrew? What's going on with you?
Oh, heck. You know, I just had had some family into my apartment for a nice birthday party for my daughter. And that was a lot of fun and, you know, general frolicking. And my mom was here, and it was a really cool time. What else has been going on? You know, after the, our last episode was a retrospective on Scratch Lee Perry, man, I got so much respect for that dude, you know, after everything I learned about him. And, the album Exodus by Bob Marley, which was kind of after, it was in the mid to later 70s, 76 or whatever, you know, it was a new face of reggae. It is so fucking cool, man. You guys got to go back and listen to that, meaning the listeners. You can check out that Scratch Lee Perry episode if you haven't yet, too. So that's what I've been doing. Rob, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm good, man. You guys nailed it. Like, we got that like perfect Chicago fall feel outside. It's still nice, but it's cool at night. And
right.
You can kind of, it's the, it, as we're easing into winter, let's hope we ease into winter. I went and did one of my favorite fall things, which is go to a friend's block party on the northwest side of the city. And they have this epic block party. They live on this epic two blocks. And it's been postponed because of the pandemic, but they fired it up again this year. And we did that on Saturday. It was awesome. It was so
nice.
Much fun. Great to see those people. Our kids all hang out, and we just kind of hang out in front of the house and eat and drink and smoke and get all fucked up.
Block parties are a good time. They always find, you always find like your right people. You know, there's always like one or two people on a block that, you know, get along better than everyone else. Can see where the squares hang out.
Absolutely.
I've never lived on a block that had a block party.
I've never lived on one that had a block party, but I've been to plenty of block
parties. We live on a cul-de-sac.
Same.
And we hosted one block party like on the cul-de-sac, sort of like in the middle of the street.
Sure.
And it worked out really well because like kind of only the cool people came.
Right.
It was pretty great.
But you guys have all heard enough Jed right here, but we didn't even get to introduce him. Hey, Jed.
Hey, great to see you, dude.
Yeah, you too, guys. It's been a minute.
It has.
I'm doing well.
The whispering.
I'll move my mic a little closer. I'm at the end of a, we're in week six of a long renovation on a master bathroom. Kind of like large project that I was promised would take 3 weeks, and we were planning on four. So now we're at the kind of like, we need this all to be over.
And
I can't feel my hand. And there's like all sorts of pain and anguish when it comes to a renovation where you live in it too. And
hell yeah,
I'm kind of there. So the energy is maybe not what I could maybe produce at a different time, but this is where I'm at right now. And I'm loving it.
But at least we're talking about something that's really easy probably for all of us to talk
about. Oh yeah, that's perfect. It's perfect for tonight. And so that brings me to, I mean, this was my pick. I needed to get a little fish into the selection box for this season. And I kind of struggled over like where I wanted to enter.
You did.
And I couldn't figure out like what the right, you know, avenue was. And it really just, it came back down to like kind of, yeah, what I cut my teeth on. And that was a live one. And it's kind of it's not a concert, but it is a concert. It's their first, like, you know,
the narrative reads like a fish show.
The narrative reads just like a fish show. It's pretty classic. Like, you know, things rock out and are pretty like speedy and work through that first set. And then you get into some really weird places in the second set you know, terrific places at that. And there's some beautiful, beautiful music on that first set too.
Indeed.
So yeah, like what do you guys like, where were you at when this came out? Or like, did you have a briefcase of tapes or were you just,
at this point,
came out in 95.
Right. I guess I'll start.
For it. Sorry, I didn't pass.
So pass the mic. What's up? for a fistful of juice. So I don't know if you guys remember, I had a roommate, his name was Steve S.
Yes.
And
unforgettable kind of guy.
Unforgettable type of guy. And the thing is, if you knew him, you knew him. But if you lived with him, you knew him in a different way. And I don't mean that badly. I just mean like, man, that guy's mind operated in a different way. And so not long after Steve and I moved into our apartment in Chicago, he was a massive tape trader. Like once he got into trading tapes, he was just so all over it. And he was getting all these tapes. He had nowhere to put them. Also, we were going to this place in Evanston, Illinois, where you could sit there all day and use like four tape dubbers and make yourself tapes all day. So we were getting hundreds of tapes together. And eventually he had me go to Home Depot and build him like, I put up these four 12 foot long shelves that he completely, Rob, you were there, right?
Absolutely.
And Kevin, maybe.
I think I've seen Kevin,
you had to be there.
I remember that place.
Yeah. But so like hundreds of fish and dead tapes. And that's how I was cutting my teeth in 1995. And then this album came out and it was kind of the best of the best is kind of at the moment how I looked at it, or just like, you know, how many late nights post bar did you spend listening to this album?
Yeah.
Is my question to you. So that's kind of where I was when it came out. I'll leave some of the more stories later, but, who else?
I was at ISU and
Illinois State.
Yeah. I remember seeing it on the jukebox at the pub, and I discussed this with somebody today that used to do this. They would go up and play that Tweezer
at the longest song you can possibly find. Yeah. It's no longer on, what's the digital jukebox. Oh. I look for it all the time. And the longest I can find is like a 14 minute Reba from the, Chicago 96 show. But yeah, they don't have a live one on a lot of those
digital jukeboxes
anymore. Cause they realize what people do.
So, you know, that's where I was. And then, and don't get me wrong. Like when I first got into Phish, what got me into Phish was a studio album, which is odd for a Phish fan. And this was the album that Jed was talking about picking as opposed to a live one, which I still love, Rift, but that's what got me into it. And then I soon saw them at U of I, which was 45 minutes from ISU. I was fucking hooked. Mm. And then I kind of circled back to a live one. And I came to this conclusion as I was re-listening to it. It's freaking awesome to begin with. But two, it's got to be the most accessible version of fish live that's been ever released. Like, and I don't know if it's a function of, I just think if you're going to introduce somebody to live fish, this would be the starting point, I feel like.
Well, I'll tell you, the band actually was instrumental in choosing the tracks. And what they were basically going for is the person who was listening to it for the first time and the grizzled vet. Like, it had to be accessible to both.
Had to match both. Sure. Yeah.
Right. So, you know, you get the shorter versions of some of these songs. You know, there's lots of longer simples. I was at one in this period. And, but there's a 5-minute version on this album.
Right.
And that's kind of make it a little bit more accessible. That is how they kind of, you know, it is very accessible for sure.
Sure.
And it's also consummate versions of some of the jam songs.
Oh yeah.
And they went all in on the tweezer on this fucking thing. I mean, they made 30 minutes of it, a tweezer. And, and not only that,
it's
not
the most there,
cohesive dude. Tweezer either.
Right.
Either.
Well, and they still hit 18th on Billboard, which is phenomenal. Like, for Fish to get agreed. Into the top 20 of a Billboard totally. Is...
Heads unite, man.
Pretty amazing, yeah. I mean, accessibility is two things. It's drawing new people in and old people that have, you know, shelves worth of tapes they already recorded, and they're still going to go buy this one.
Yep.
And then the noob that hears it on a jukebox, like, and goes and buys it like me.
Or in the same party, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, say there's me and Steve standing around this thing, you know, because we've heard Fish for the last year and a half and we're just starving for it. And there's also, you know, there could be a young Jet around this stereo too who hasn't heard it at all, you know, and we're both digging it the same way. And that's one of the, you know, I think to the four of us, Fish is a semi-magical band.
Yeah.
And you'll kind of hear that through. I mean, you know, all the shit just makes too much sense. And, you know, it's all built on the fact that they're a giant joke. And, I mean, you know, basically everything they do is, in the early years, was a joke. Intended to make you laugh, you know, including the name of this album, A Live One, you know. Because it was the response to the quote, you know, when are you going to put out a live one?
Right.
So Jed, to answer your original question.
I wanted to circle back to that.
I'll cut
all that out.
Thank you. To answer your question, Jed, I bought this on the first day it came out. I was in by this time, like... This was, I was looking forward to this and hearing these versions of these songs because I was kind of like, Steve was already kind of in, you know, like the tape stuff, like
Steve was in,
right? Like in kind of running parallel, you know, in that same way.
Sure.
We hadn't met yet. That was right around the corner, you know, not too long after that.
Legitimately.
But basically around that time, yeah, like it was about tape trading. It was about getting the shit in the mail. And like, I was still living at home, so I didn't have a lot of responsibility. I could afford to like buy a fucking brick of Maxells and mail them off and, you know, my AOL.com email address or whatever the hell it was at the time. But that was, I did that for like a couple of 2 or 3 years and I gave like, 2 or 3 of those, you know, those stacks, those like wooden stacks.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
I straight up just gave them away to a friend of mine, you know, and I kind of wish I had them back on a lot of levels. There were a lot of good tapes in there. Fish, Dead, everything.
All and kept like one briefcase. I think we have 1 or 2 briefcases worth of like tapes that
and
most of them don't play anymore. Like I've tried to play them and they break apart.
Really? That was my, that
I think
was
some
my
of them
issue.
Were kept in a garage and they were sort of, sure. wasn't ideal.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That was my issue too with that whole analog tape thing. And don't get me wrong. I listened to plenty of it, probably owned 2, but it was the quality on some of them. And don't get me wrong, I was with some people, i.e. Steve and Nate and Drew and you, really, Kevin, that were all about quality. But even the highest quality, well, I actually wasn't.
I would listen to some shitty tapes because I just love the fucking music so much.
That killed whatever needed to get there.
Right. I mean, it killed you, killed a few other friends of mine. And things like, I just, you know, I didn't know how to research it well enough to be that particular.
Sure.
At this point, I'm much more particular than I was back.
You can get everything.
Go ahead. Re-Listen has 45 different options or whatever.
Well, it doesn't have studio release, but go ahead, Kevin.
Oh, sorry. I mean, I had email exchanges with people about tape quality where like they cursed me out because I pissed on the quality of their tapes. I was like, really? Ooh. This is what you're sending me? You know, like I had Champagne and I traded him for Utah Fall of 97 and the Utah I felt came back. It sounded like ass. And I was just
really?
Like, really? I was like, this fucking Champagne I gave you was a fucking rip, man. You know what I'm talking about, Andrew. You listen to that fucking tape, right?
Yep. Is this Champagne 96? Oh, 97.
No, 97. Fuck, man. 97 slays 96. I'm sorry.
Was it? Not even. Because I was at.
All right. No one's listening that was there.
But it was.
We were there, Drew.
Yeah, all three of us, right?
Yeah.
I feel like we might be bouncing around a room a little bit right now.
Maybe
we should hop in.
Yeah, that's the opening song, right?
That's right.
Yeah, that's the one. That actually was the reason why I was like torn on putting this out. But then I like re-listened to it and was like, oh, this is a good version of this song. And then holy shit, everything else is so great. Because it had been a minute. But yeah, I actually stumbled upon this album. I had been dabbling and enjoying jam band music after coming out of a lot of punk and like ska, like lots of little tiny ska and punk bands, and like needing something new and exploring stuff like mid high school, like sort of figuring things out, sophomore, junior year. And, was shooting a lot of pool and I discovered they had Rift and then they put this on at a
pool
bowling
hall?
A bowling alley that was a pool hall too and in Rosemont, and I would hang out at this like, or maybe it was Des Plaines, but yeah, this pool hall, and like started listening to this. It was like I had known Rift from friends and then like this was on and you're just like, you know, it's something that you can just get completely immersed and lost in.
Totally.
It's an accessible song. It's the song that you get you can have with your kids on, and you know, and this is just a good version of it to start it off.
Any normal music listener can listen to this and say, that's pretty, you know?
Totally. Yeah, absolutely. You know,
that's a pretty song.
And this is the radio. I mean, this is their radio song, really. I mean,
it was released as a single. And strange enough, Apple has it really as a like, high priority download, as it's the only one on the album. And it's like, once again, marketing loses again, you know?
Right.
It's completely missed the
people that are,
like people who are actually downloading aren't downloading the 2.5 minute bouncing around the room.
Right. But then it jumps directly into an amazing, you know, 12 and a half minute stash. That's just
correct.
This stash rips a hole in my space-time continuum.
Amen. Amen. I mean, they did this, you know, they released the, you know, the video from this during the pandemic as one of the dinner in a movies, and getting to see this stash, just watching this.
Did the earth crack open?
Oh my God. And like
some sort of demon come out of it.
So basically, you know, this is like, it's a 12 and a half minute song, but basically the first 6 minutes, you know, it's like the composed part. And then for the next, right? And then like the next 4 minutes, without Trey taking a solo, the music just kind of plays itself.
Builds,
right? And then the next 2.5 minutes are just some of the most epic fire and brimstone jamming you've ever heard in your life, right?
Yes. Like, yes.
I mean, it's
their dark side for sure, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, like, the Dead had a dark side and Fish has got a dark side.
Oh, yeah.
And this was it, man. This is like, yeah. I mean,
scorched earth.
You feel like Trey is fucking mad at you. And I love that feeling.
Yeah, I went back and watched that video to just watch his shaggy ass hair just bounce up off and down as he just thrashes, and the band is just this epic wall of sound behind him during that last two, like, you know, even just kind of at the beginning of his 2.5 minutes, you can tell it's on, and I don't know, he just takes off from there.
It is a killer.
I mean, 94 was a moment in time when they could just mm-hmm. attack and just go for it. I mean, just vibrating music at you. Like
94 was wildly aggressive, and they toured for almost the entire year. I think they played about starting in April. I think they played damn near 100 plus shows that year.
Wow.
And when you think about it, if over a course of a year, that's 173 nights, something like that. If you cram it into 8 months, it's like it's fucking living it.
Four nights
and
a week.
And it's nothing.
Three in a
obviously, yeah, we're talking 3 hour shows. It's like nothing to scoff at, right? You know?
Yeah, it's not the hour long, like, White Stripe show you're going to see.
Yeah.
Just like, okay, bye.
Yeah, the indie band that plays the same like set list every night. Yeah.
Right.
They don't even same break a set sweat. Every
yeah. Right. And, yeah. And that's another thing, too. Like Kevin said, you go to the following two nights and you're not going to see the same song three times, you know, or you're not going to see the same song twice
at all. Yeah.
No, so, you won't see the same song in the same city on a given run. That's right. For sure. And, you know, we should say for the, you know, if you know, not that much into Fish, you know, the typical first back in the day, the first Fish set was usually about 90 minutes long, wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. the second set might be 15 minutes longer than that usually. Actually, the second set often was shorter because it contained more jamming and fewer songs.
Right.
And curfews.
You know.
And they had to get their freaking encore in, too.
Right. They got to get the encore in. And so just as a reference, and that's kind of how the CDs are set up, you know, in the, you know, say CD1 and CD2, you get the kind of the difficult, you know, non-jammy shit in the first set. And then you get a treat if you're good. That's what Pete Townsend always said. So, like, in the treat when you're good is this stash, And you know, when he decides to solo again out of the murkiness that would, you know, is the, you know, the building band that Kevin talked about, it is just absolutely, I mean, I had it seared across my head all damn day. And yep. You're going, you know, you guys are going to listen to it. So, it's just a fabulous song. It's been one of my top five Fish songs for my entire career, really. Fish career, no that question. Is. It happens. It gets put in that first set quite a bit for, you know, I think as a lot of spice. And, but occasionally I get a second set one. And then that's when you know it's on like Donkey Kong.
So next, what's the next tune? Gumbo?
Yeah, so it jumps into those horns, the thing that's been ringing in my ears all day long, just that same, like, when they kick it in, I think it's like 2.5 minutes in, and you're just like, there's just, they're playing with the great country horns, and it's giant, like, country horns. Just so, giant country horns, okay. I'm sorry, it's late, but yeah, I absolutely love this track, and I love when they're playing together. It's
a perfect track for horns, moment. Right? It's kind
it
of,
is.
Right? It's so like perfect. It's like this and Susie, like there's a few of them that kind of just fit perfectly, right?
Yeah, Susie's
right?
Classic.
Landlady, Susie's a classic, like, horn, you know, there's some that just kind of like they're so perfect for the horns, and yeah. This is like a perfect version of it. Got in the toe for my angry pills with me.
Agreed. And the interplay between the band and the horns is I mean, it's quite professionally done. It's definitely, you know,
play,
I can't think of the goddamn word, but it's composed perfectly.
I feel like it's incredibly playful.
Oh, yeah.
And it's, you know, like they're so comfortable playing together that they can bounce around and they can time things how they need to work around each other and play with each other and pass that ball around. And I think that's what I love about it. Like, it's obviously been composed, but they know how to play this thing and they can do it together.
Fuck
and,
too.
I mean, you're talking about master musicians that can just, they can do what they want when they want to.
What'd you say, Rod?
That's really what
it's,
sand
it's
is
hooky
about.
As hell too. Like, you guys are talking about stuff being stuck in your head. Yeah. I can't get that line out of my head all fucking day. And I've been listening to this album for 2 days straight, basically.
What line is that?
There ain't no time to stash the
right.
I mean, that's just hooky as fuck.
Right.
Like, I can't stop singing it. Like, if
a
you
partial,
have a...
Yeah. Oh, sorry, Rob. Yeah.
If you have, like, just a second space in your brain, your brain's going to pick that up again. It's just, I don't know. That's how it is with me, at least.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I have those horn parts hooked in my head like that.
Yeah, the horns.
Especially the ones
just, that's
right at the end of the song. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then it transitions, right? Into Montana.
Right. Yeah.
Montana, which is a mid-jam interlude, is the best way I can describe it. I mean, it's not like a song they played or anything. It's something they actually played in Bozeman, Montana. And that's how it was named. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just an entryway into something new.
But wait, what are they going to enter into?
They're going to enter into what we came into, what we introed with into this podcast, and that is You Enjoy Myself, which in my opinion is probably the number one signature song of Fish. Discuss.
It's got to be the finest Fish tune ever. And I'm not saying like
fine is like fine favorite. Wine, I think is what you
yeah,
mean.
Yeah. It's like, it's like, if you want to know what Fish is, like, that's what I would play. Right.
Yeah.
I just would.
Yeah. It's the song that makes Fish Fish.
I go right.
Right.
Yeah.
It's It's like the name is even like makes your brain freaking bounce.
I still
you
know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Break a little bit. Yeah.
And I didn't get it, you know, initially when I got into fish, but then, you know, it's one of those that clicks and you're just like, holy shit. Like it's fucking amazing. It's amazing.
Right. And at this time it was, I mean, it progressed into being like a show closer song, but still in the mid 90s, this was a first set song. If you can imagine that. And right. I will say this particular version is only like 20 minutes long. They're usually just, right now they're just 25 flat even. So nice compact little You Enjoy Myself. The composed sections are so beautiful. Someone just did it with love and tenderness, and then like the jam that usually, you know, comes after it. It was absolutely unhinge your shit. I mean, right. It was absolutely, you know, make you go wobbly. Jed?
Oh, I was going to say, yeah, you said someone, and I said, no, yeah, Trey wrote that beautiful piece of music. Like, I mean, I think this is the song more than anything that I'm not sure if it's the one that drew me into Fish, but it was definitely something that like gave me an entryway into like the deep dive of Fish, where I was like, this is, yeah, just what Fish is, you know, like what you said, like this is what makes Fish Fish, Kevin. And
when you start to really embrace the weirdness in the jams of Fish, this song is
it's a completely that, right?
Yes. It's a seminal song.
You don't love this song.
This is it. But yeah, this is the crown jewel of this. You know, I mean, this is such a beautiful version of this song. It's like Andrew said, it's not the longest, but it's perfectly played. Sounds great.
Yeah, it's an incredible. The thing is, like, all of the versions on this album are consummate, and that's what made it so fucking good. Is that for the ravenous Fish fan, it was all you could take.
Choice and the best listening of what you probably had access to.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, it was the band's multi-track recording, so technically, yes. So I don't think there's anything you can dispute about this being the signature song of Fish, and this is a pristine version, no doubt about it. It should be checked out if you check nothing else out. And then we go into Talk Dust.
Torture Chapters Collects at my time.
Yeah.
Right. Kind of a ripping version. Pretty typical first set version.
Yeah. Very first set Chalk Dust for sure.
It has, you know, it's all the trimmings of Chalk Dust without, you know, the what is now, you know, in the 3.0 era known as the Chalk Dust Jam. Chalk Dust Jam. Pretty nice little Chalk Dust. Nothing to report out of the ordinary, except it is once again an artifact of Fish just absolutely playing with absolute precision and doing it.
I mean, it was the selection of the year, the one that they picked. So it has to have been like, it's probably like one of the better ones of the, of 94.
Yeah. And it
was how they were playing. They were just playing it then, you know, like that's how they were playing it.
Totally. It'd be about 5 years until they really jammed it out. So I think this is a fine representative version of that song from this time. Perfectly fine. And then it dovetails into the last song, which is Slave, right? Jed?
Beautiful, beautiful set one closer. It just, you know, if you're looking at it like a concert, I think it's kind of perfect.
One of my favorite Phish tunes, and I've always liked the play between Paige and Trey in this tune. Just is so beautiful, and I got kind of some history behind this song.
Oh, go for it.
98, third show, UIC, Drew and Kevin, I'm positive you were both there. And we had gone to both nights previous. And I think the third set three or night three was a Monday, and a tragic
night three. I was with Kevin. Actually, I was with you the previous two nights, but yeah, night three I was with Kevin. I do believe
tragically.
Yeah, anyway. That was a really
that good Saturday night. Show was my first Phish show.
Really? So
yeah,
those were great shows.
Yes.
Great.
So tragically and kind of suddenly, because we weren't seeing it, like I had gone to work that day and was going to come back. I lived in the city and I was going to come back and go to the show. My mom said, get to the hospital. Your grandpa's dying. So my grandpa ended up dying. And I told my friends, I said, sell my ticket. I can't make it. My grandpa just died. You know, maybe I'll see you guys after because I got to come back and pick up clothes and whatever. So we spent the evening in the hospital, and my mom's like, well, you might as well go back to the city and get clothes and stuff like that, because you're going to have all kinds of stuff to do. I said, all right. So I did, and I was in Elmhurst at Elmhurst Hospital. So the logical path is 290. So I take 290 back, and I look at my clock in my car, and
which is the highway for people who aren't in Chicago.
Sorry.
90 goes right past UIC Pavilion where the Phish show was.
Right. So I
go ahead, Brian.
And it's literally right off the highway. So I'm like, man, it's gotta be, they're playing right now. So I just pulled my car off the highway, and they were in the middle of set one. And this is a while back in the city. So like, I just parked in front of UIC Pavilion. There was nobody out there. Everybody was at the show. And a guy had a door open to get air. And he's just standing there. And I told him, I'm like, listen, man, my grandpa died. My friends are all in here. I just wanted to stop and listen for a minute. He's like, oh, dude, go ahead. So I'm standing there for like 10, 15 minutes. And he goes, hey, go park your car. I'll let you in. So he's like, there's a parking garage right down the block. So I go and park my car. And I bust ass back over. He's like, all right, man, sorry about your grandpa. Have a good time. And I walked in, and it was like right at the start of the second set. I found a seat. I had a little weed stashed in my car with a hitter rod, so I was good there. I got a beer. I'm like, this fucking dude just let me in the show.
That is perfect.
And they...
Yeah, that's wild.
That's a great story, man.
And they did Slave. And I just remember, I always loved that song. And I just remember like sitting there, stoned, smoking a hitter, crying my eyes out and listening to Slaves to the Traffic Light. And just like, God, this is incredible. Like, this was like a moment in my heart. Like, I didn't need anybody else there. It was like me and my grandpa and fucking Phish, right? And show ends, right? They do their second set and their encore. And I go to turn down the stairwell and walk out into like the main area of UIC Pavilion. And there's everybody I know right there.
Oh, wow.
And they're like, what the fuck? I'm like, dude, you're not going to believe this, but listen. And I tell them all this fucking story. They're like, no fucking way. They're like,
oh, that's amazing. Well,
come jump. Cause we had taken the L down there. Cause we lived right by the L. Right. They're like, come on, jump in the L. I'm like, no, somebody's going to ride with me. I have my car here. Like, so I think Jimmy and Zach rode back with me or something, but they're like, holy shit, I can't believe you just walked down those steps and found us. That's after awesome. All. It was fucking so great. Magical.
What an awesome story and a great set.
That's kind of why it's a magical band, you know.
Totally.
Shit like that happens at fish shows.
Right.
I mean, yeah. It's just, I mean, for us anyway.
Totally.
You know, we're just four common freaking dudes. For
people who knew, right. Who know enough people at fish shows.
Yeah, no doubt.
I mean, the same,
but you probably know. You do same often thing happened end up in, finding, you do end up finding like the one or two people in 20,000 that are at the
right
show,
that you know.
How is that convenient for that to have happened?
It happens to
like
me.
Rob and I at 2018 Chicago when we got in that beer line. Oh, your whole yes. fucking crew, mm-hmm. Jed was screaming at us. Right.
Oh yeah, we're all in the mezzanine. We're like, fuck it.
15 people like screaming, 15 Rob and Andrew. People. We're 10 feet away from them.
Like, we have been standing here this entire
right.
run. Like, this has been our spot.
And then we, it's and then perfect. Drew, we walk up the stairs, remember? And we saw freaking Sean and Gilly, I think it was.
Oh, yeah.
Remember
yeah,
that? Yeah. Like, we were going back from getting those drinks. And Sean's like, what's up? Like, he always says, what's up? I'm like, dude, no way. No way. Just keep, it's nuts, dude. That was that very
it's
same.
It's crazy how you run into people.
Yeah. Fish is church, man.
It is, dude.
Yeah,
it's a congregation of like-minded people.
It is. That
congregate.
I mean, we all like different special. Music. For sure. We all like different music. We're all into different shit. And that's kind of what this podcast is about, is each one of us is exposing you to our personal music.
Sure.
But fish is like a common thread that runs pretty closely amongst all of our friends.
Correct.
Well, and at its best, fish at its best is a pathway to the divine. I always say that to people who are uninitiated, because when they're playing at their best,
it's the best way to sell them.
Well, I mean, whatever. Like, people go to church, people like meditate, people like do a lot of shit nowadays to try to find the hum of the universe, right?
Right. Right.
And since day one, Trey has intentionally tried to build community that somehow achieved that. And I think in a lot of ways for a lot of people he has. And that to me is the best way to sum that
up. Dude, he's created, and you're right. Like, if you think about it, he's created like almost all of my best friendships have spawned from music, and
fish is all of my best.
And right. And a lot of it, like a huge chunk of it, is all because of fish, dude. It's, right. it is. And you said it, Jed and Drew or Kevin, we've talked about this on multiple occasions. And then I've talked about it with other friends of mine. And we all agree, and nobody thinks I'm fucking nuts when I say it, but fucking live music is church. And especially, this is like the fucking...
Amen.
This is like the fucking, you know, this time or that time for us in fish was like the fucking Vatican, dude. I mean, legitimately. Like, it was like...
It was as good as it got.
Yeah.
I mean...
Yeah.
Let's lay it out there.
It looks like...
I don't
lean away from the Vatican...
Comment. Well, you know what I'm saying. It was like the epicenter
Of course I do. Epicenter.
It's the height of religious.
The height of,
fish was, if you know, you know.
Totally.
Thing, right? And you had to experience it to truly know it. Like, you could listen to it. And the thing about this disc is that it was kind of a, like, on some level, it was kind of an entry point for a lot of people. You know, and that was cool as hell because of the second set, we're going to find out why.
That's right, man.
Agreed.
So this why don't we go out on Slave to the Traffic Light?
Yes. And in this being, we were talking about how this is set up almost like a show, this being the end of this first set right here.
chronologically.
Right.
Right. You're going to go get beers. You're going to maybe take a pee.
Yep. You're going to go fucking run up some friends. You're
smoke a bowl with your friends.
That you know are there, but you might not have found yet. Around. Right.
Kiss your kids goodnight. Mow the lawn. Come on back.
Yep.
Right on. So come back for disc two of a live one on the Music Challenge podcast. We'll talk to you in just a minute or two.
See you guys.
Bye-bye. From the Music Challenge podcast, and I want to tell you how you can help us bring you more awesome music commentary episodes. You can subscribe in the listening app of your choice, or you can share this episode with someone you think might dig it. Please leave a rating and review for us on the listening app of your choice, or you can get in touch with us at musicchallengepod@gmail.com. Check us out on Facebook. Just search Music Challenge Pod and like us to follow us. We hope you enjoy the Music Challenge podcast, and thanks for listening. Back on the Music Challenge podcast, we are looking at A Live One by Phish, back from 1995, their epic first released live album from their own soundboard recordings. In any case, what you just heard was Wilson, the epic beginning to the call and refrain of Wilson, and that was a Game Henge tune, was it not?
Yeah, I believe it was.
It was, yeah.
Yeah, I had that bootleg CD when you could still, I believe I bought it, Andrew, in Champaign, Illinois.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, well, you know, one of those bootleg stores, probably.
Record Swap?
Was it an import?
Record Swap. well, there was one, yeah, it was in the import section, but there was one in, like, I want to say kind of like West Champaign.
Oh, it wasn't Mother Murphy's? Sense?
Periscope?
Might have been, yeah. Like
that's where Steve Siegel and I bought some of our first Grateful Dead bootlegs for money.
Yeah, as did I. I mean, I think
like CDs.
I
think
CDs. I had two. I had a bunch of. I remember succinctly that Game Henge was one of them because I wanted to kind of dig into what that was about.
So yeah. Real quick, what Game Henge is Trey wrote that as his graduate thesis, I do believe, and presented it to the band, taught the band it, band the songs, and it's an enormous collection of songs, which is still the backbone of their repertoire, and Wilson is one of them. And I couldn't tell you what the character is of Wilson, whatever else, but this song presenting Wilson.
Wilson's the villain. Wilson's the main villain.
He's the bad dude.
Yeah. The main villain. And this song became like wildfire later on in popular culture when, you know, sports teams started adopting it.
Walk-up music for everyone.
Right? Yeah. I mean, it just, yeah, this thing is, it became iconic. You think about it, how the guys literally, like his senior thesis for college ended up becoming like Cock Rock anthems, Cock Rock anthems for dudes named Wilson.
They used to play it.
It's crazy.
I mean, they only played it because a fish head was like occupying the audio booth.
Well, but it's in multiple stadiums now.
And they happen to know that fish heads watch sports.
Yeah,
because the jam band music, or Grateful Dead and Fish, are just invading all, just even Cubs broadcasts, even talk radio intros, outros of commercials, all that kind of shit. But Wilson's Wilson gets on, and besides the call and refrain, which we heard earlier, gets down to be a damn good jamming song.
Hell yeah!
By the end of it, and then we hit, which you know is we will call this the albatross of the album, Tweezer. Epic jam song by Fish. We all know that. But this version is a little different. Kevin?
Well, I mean, you know, it's one of those historic ones. It's one, it's the reason that the hardcore fans, like Jed said, you know, he already explained how this album was kind of selected and cherry picked, so to speak. This was the one that everybody was looking to hear, you know, when they, when this song was a thing, it was a big deal in tape trading circles at the time. This, to get this on a CD, and in that time was pretty historic and pretty amazing.
With this quality.
Yeah. So why is it just such a, why is it so collected?
Okay. So it's, basically, it's about a four-part suite of music, maybe, I would say.
Sure.
You know, that's kind of bookended. But basically, it's a half hour long, and they go through these distinct, almost like practice exercises, if it makes sense. Well,
it's definitely improvisational.
Right? Pasted together, I think under certain circumstances, and I know it has under certain circumstances, probably melted people's brains to the insides of their skulls.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
There's definitely been a lot of face melting.
Right? When I say improvisational, I mean, in this particular case, this is a really blank canvas. You know, like, they're completely out of the structure of Tweezer whatsoever. And, you know, in my opinion, simulating noises, which, you know, don't normally come from a rock and roll band of any type. I mean, it sounds like there's a plane crashing at one point. It sounds like, you know, there's all types of intricate play that.
I was wondering if you were going to bring that up, because that was the exact thing that popped up in my mind.
We took a quick break and I re-listened to it, like, sort of like, you know, like, just clipped and re-listened to it, and just for my own memory, and for, so I broke it down by time, and, you know, the first to 1 to 3 minutes is like classic Tweezer.
Sure.
3 to 8 is, you know, like funk into jazz. 6 to 10 goes into dark, creepy jazz.
Yeah.
Into shred, and then into shred crazy. That's what my friend
shred. That's crazy.
That's how my brain broke that down.
Most of it is the improv shit, though.
I mean, wild improv, like wild improvisational jazz nonsense, like wildness.
Well, yeah, this, you know, if you think about fall '94, kind of historically. They had done this a couple of times. I mean, there's this, which, what was it? Banger, Maine, I want to say.
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly where. And then
there's also the, like, the David Bowie that they did in Providence from 1229 that goes really super dark.
Yeah, all of the 12, like, right? all the December shows were really pretty.
Yeah, so, like, it, sure. this, like... This jamming, these were like straight up practice exercises in some things that they used to do. And they, I think they intentionally kind of pasted them together, but they used to drink hot chocolate laced with mushrooms and practice and do these exact the same exercises.
Infamous right? Okipa ceremony,
yeah.
as it is known and written about.
And so to get this captured, that sounds this good and this amazing, and I think he's blown so many minds over the years, is it's a pretty epic achievement on Fish's part to get a major label to produce this.
Absolutely. That is a good point.
Right? It was Elektra at the time, maybe, right?
Yeah, it was Elektra. Yeah, Ryko Disc.
Elektra,
yeah. Ryko Disc.
And, you know, like I said, you know, like you could take any track on this album, and it's pretty much somehow a normal rock and roll. I mean, it's not, it's Fish. It's a Fish rock and roll track. The Tweezer, however, is that, like, they decided, okay, we're going to put this 30 minute bastard in here. And we don't really give a
fuck. Like,
if you're into the, if you haven't hit fast forward after the first 10 minutes, then I guess they got you.
Right.
And it's almost just, that's the throw out there for the hardcore heads.
They needed a reason for people like, you know, me and Steve and, right. you know, the, like, to buy this thing. If it was a collection of bouncing around the rooms, I'm not sure. You know what I mean? I'm not sure people would have bought it. Right. Like, but this, I literally bought this on the first day, you know, when I, like, yeah, it's a masterpiece. So I don't know. This to me is so fun to just revisit. And then you think about kind of this being a launching point of a bunch of these historically for them, right? Like, and they kind of do this on the reg now, and it's fucking awesome.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Now that Fish is fun again, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. Fish is fun again.
Right? For sure. Like,
there was a certain time when they weren't fun. That right, is for
it,
sure.
It wasn't, yeah. Like, I don't know.
I mean, that's, the 2010, 9 through, oh, Jesus. I mean, 2015.
I'd say 15 was the kind of crack.
Like, when they cracked the egg.
Where they cracked it. Bit. Yeah. Magna Ball, they started.
Right, exactly. And even though they weren't that good at it yet, as far as like getting back to jamming, it's almost like they had to reform their muscle memory or something completely.
But that theater, that drive-in set, right? That thing that they did, right? Like that kind of melted a lot of minds in the Tweezer, Caspian, right? From that stuff.
Oh,
Are you talking about Tahoe?
No, the Magna Ball stuff, right?
There was some serious jamming.
I remember that at the time.
I wasn't there. I saw it on live feed.
Yeah, it was fun at the time.
You went to Magna Ball?
No, I didn't.
We took a big break in that time zone to have a bunch of children, or bunch. We had two. But then then went to 4 shows for the Baker's Dozen in 17 and feel like they had, like, that was when, like, the coagulation sort of started to come back, you know, like there was like something new that was growing and they were figuring out. And like, now I think they've really, you know, in the last year or so, they've really hit it. Like, they're,
well, you're exactly right, Jed. And one of the songs that they jammed kind of really hardcore in 2017, right before the Baker's Dozen, was the next song on this album, which is Simple.
Mm-hmm. Right. And this is a kind of a preliminary Simple, preliminary, I guess I should say, primordial simple back when they were just figuring it out. I actually saw a show in November of 94. It was the night after Thanksgiving. It was my first fucking show. And I was on two hits of acid on the floor of UIC Pavilion.
That sounds magical.
And yeah, it was. And they put a Mike song in the simple, in the Harpua. Which was just like, Jesus Christ. And I didn't even know these songs. And I was like, who the fuck are these guys? And
let me take two hits of acid. Let's go find out.
I mean, because my friend, Steve S., he's like, I guarantee you this is a psychedelic band. And I'm like, I don't know. I'm pretty into the Grateful Dead. That's a psychedelic band. And he's like, no, dude, check this out. and we had preliminary runs, but it was like,
no, dude.
But like the first song was Llama, and if anyone's familiar with the speed of that song, I was just like, who the fuck are these dudes? And lo and behold, so there was the simple that night. There was a simple in 2017, and then we come across one of their old standard favorites, still a favorite to this day, Harry Hood. What can you say about Harry Hood? I mean, it was named after a milk factory across the field from their apartment building, yeah. I do believe.
It's right. It is delicious. It is delicious fucking milk. I will tell you that. Like,
yeah.
It is really, really good. If you ever get to Vermont, Hood milk is wonderful. And but yeah, this is like, for me, this is the like kind of a, this is just what I think of for Harry Hood. Like, I know you think they sound all the same, but they don't. But like, this is just what I think it's implanted into my brain as like, this is the song.
This is a really good Harry Hood. Yeah, there you go. The guitar. Brash. Yeah, the guitar is incredibly brash. Like, it's kind of a small arena type deal. Like, you know, it's not quite arena rock quite yet. And it's a kind of a young, I would say it's, you know, early. Goddamn, when is it? It's a primordial type sound, you know, like the solo in it is pretty brash. Sorry, Jed, I completely fucking cut you off.
Oh no, that's cool. I wasn't saying it was the like penultimate. Like I just this is what I hear when I think about what I want to hear out of a Harry Hood. I want this one because it's like loud. Sure. Harsh and brash and like
which is the beauty of this album. Once again, there's no version of anything on this album where you could be like, man, that sucks, there's a better one.
Everyone has their opinions, but there's some
personal favorites.
There's just personal favorites.
I mean, Fish is
everything such a, here is so solid.
Fish is such a personal experience. You know, where you were at certain shows, you heard certain things, you saw certain things, you felt a certain way. Whatever led you through your day to get you to the show. You know, did you drive? Did you come from home? Did you have to work? Whatever. I mean, all this stuff adds up to your own Fish experience.
Absolutely.
And you know, and it's kind of cemented by, you know, the people you find standing around you at these fucking shows that are going through the exact same things.
Right.
Well, you know, yeah, that's exactly what we were just, we were talking about this in the break, that it's just, it's such a community, you know, like it is, it's church for a lot of people. And it's this, like, hey, Kevin,
go ahead.
Coach. Yeah. No, this Harry Hood is, this song is bliss. I mean, if you cannot kind of lose yourself in the release of this song, like absolutely, this song is an exercise in just letting go and letting right, the music drive positivity. And it's, I mean, there are some epic moments. I've seen some of them in person.
Standing right next to you.
Best ones ever played. And some of those just throughout the years. I mean, you know, and this is, yeah, this is a beautiful one. I mean, I'm going to drop one date in for our listeners to just explore because it's a, it's an early Harry Hood and it's my personal favorite. It was the one that like the, you know, Jed's talking about kind of imprinting a perfect version of it into your brain. 11490, there's a really nicely recorded one that's full of
Colorado.
It's Colorado. It's a beautiful, it's a beautifully recorded version of Harry Hood that's heavy on, you know, the grand piano. It's pages in front of this one and it's just gorgeous and just so well played. It's beautiful.
Well, I can't wait. I mean, I can't say I haven't heard it before, but I'm excited to dive back into early 90s because that's the stuff I have just not really embraced
as much. It's such something. It's such a pretty version. I don't know. They toured with the grand piano for the first time, and some of those songs just really sound, when the piano was mic'd up front and center, it's a different band, you know, and it's Page doesn't have 75,000 effects. It is, you know,
right. It's
like just, he does it's like, today.
It's that and a synth,
which leads us very conveniently into the Squirming Coil, which is
right.
Which beautiful. Is, you know, a Page can, you know, feature.
But yeah, it's a showcase, right? Yeah,
right.
And absolutely. And I'll always say, like that piano in the Squirming Coil in this one again. Like you guys were talking about the Hood being kind of a textbook Hood. This is how I imagine the Squirming Coil sounding in my head. Piano, the last 5, 6, 7 minutes or whatever, when Page goes off and Trey stops kind of playing, interplaying with him, and he just does his thing. It's like I can have that piano fucking playing behind me in life. Just like as I'm walking through the
that's
world.
Your life music? You know? That's your skinny music? I love it.
Right. Like people are like, what's that? I'm like, oh, that's Paige playing the SM Squirming Coil. Like when somebody asked me, oh, that's Paige playing the SM Squirming Coil. I mean, I love it. And this one is fucking beautiful. Like his piano sounds so gorgeous.
Yeah, yes. It's curious to note that piano outro was pasted on.
yeah,
to another version, but it's the same night as they played that Harry Hood.
No fucking way.
Yeah. Yep.
The splice.
Yeah.
Right.
Production at its finest.
But the energy,
that's what happens when Atlantic produces your record.
No, but the energy that was in that night, they might have just botched one of the composed parts, you know,
sure,
that Squirming Coil. But yeah, the fact that that
they
energy
did it well,
produced Paige's piano outro and that Harry Hood that night, that, right, you know, that makes something.
And those are the types of things going back. Like, I hear those spots in songs, like that spot in Squirming Coil. That shit, if I'm watching that live, dude, I don't care. I'm fucking, there's tears coming down my face.
Yes.
Dude.
Yeah. Like, I've been to concerts with Rob, and Rob is an emotional human being. And yeah, Rob is prone to the, to a cry every now and then.
It feels good too. It's just,
oh,
like,
yeah,
this is fucking awesome. Like, so awesome. That's the only emotion that kind of I can expel and describes the way I feel. It's like it's not a sorrowful thing. It's
no, if that's where the music takes you, that's where the music takes you. Right. Like, right, that's what, yeah, it's supposed to do. And if that's what your body needs to do, if that's where your mind needs to go, then like the music is just the vehicle, right? Yep.
Yeah.
And yeah. And Phish is one of the best bands still today for that, I think.
Yeah. I agree. I've cried at several Phish shows.
Like, fuck yeah, dude. I mean, and I don't know if you guys caught this, if we were talking about this when we were on air or not, but like these guys, literally these four guys, and that's why I get defensive of them sometimes too, because this band created some of the greatest relationships that I've ever been in. I will ever be in my life, you know, like they just did.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I've seen a lot of shows with two of the guys in this podcast, like a lot. Yep, and, yep, you know, we've seen a lot of different music together too, but the lion's share of it is this.
I mean, Rob, you and I went to the fucking tip of Maine.
Yes, we did.
For a fucking festival, yeah, which changed our lives, you know.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a fucking game changer, Drew. I mean, literally. Yeah.
It was, I mean, that was something amazing. Else.
Yes.
And we're talking about the Great Wind, are we not? Yes, we are.
Yeah,
we're talking about
Great Wind.
Yeah, we fucking hauled ass to the Great Wind. Yeah. So orient yourselves to that if you haven't.
It's the northernmost point in Maine, just so you all know.
Yeah, it's north of Canada, actually. it's that part where Canada dips down. Yeah, it's in the part that's north of that. So.
Yeah, and Maine dips up.
Yeah.
Limestone, Maine.
My wife made that haul.
Yeah, we made it the year after.
Lemon Wheel.
Yeah, that was, that took forever to get to. Yeah.
Oh, my
absolutely.
God, dude.
What a journey. Yeah, it was an absolute journey. Good Lord. But yeah, like the fact that this band can kind of bring that sense of community together. I mean, shit, the first show that I saw was the first of those two 94 UIC shows they played. And I literally looked in the paper, like I'd passed up the opportunity to see them in 93 because I was literally driving down to Champaign while my friends who were going to the show were in Champaign already and are like, hey, we're going to head back to Tinley to go see Phish. You want to go? And I was like, fuck, I just came from there. Fuck it. No, I'm moving into my new house, whatever. No, it was like, I wanted to go, but I just didn't want to like go back in the car.
That's a hard drive to
right. Turn yeah. On. It was like, fuck, man. I just literally gotten there too. So hard pass, like you said, Jed. So that next summer, I had literally woke up in the morning and my parents had the paper in the entertainment section and I had seen like Phish and I was like, what? And so I just kind of called my buddy. I was like, dude, we got to just fucking go to this, man. Like, I passed them up already and they fucking rock. We got to go, you know?
Right.
And the minute I stepped in, that, yeah, I mean, this, like, my life changed forever in countless positive ways as a result of getting hipped to this band on that night. Yeah. I mean, that was a legendary show, whatever. The band released it, both of them, from that epic year. Both were,
because yes, they
incredibly amazing concerts from that room, whatever.
Right.
And the band's on fire, right? And this was kind of like the catalog of that whole experience for this band, you know, the cherry picked highlights of those tours.
Right on.
Yep.
Same, ironically, the same building that I had my experience where that guy let me into the fucking show and the second set, you know?
Yeah,
you
right? Think about that, building. Right? Yeah.
The UIC Pavilion is a hockey arena in Chicago. And as you can tell, we've had some pretty tasty fish events at this place. The thing is, we've seen them in lots of different places in Chicago, but this place is... I mean, first of all, they rock out an indoor arena. And second of all, this indoor arena ain't that big. And it just rocks.
Yes. Yeah. It's tiny, rocks. Right? Yeah.
I mean, 8,000, 10,000 people.
It does really feel tiny once you're in there. I was just in there to see.
And this is a big band.
Yeah. It was. Yeah. They couldn't pull that off anymore. It would be a fucking madhouse. I don't know. You think they could do UIC?
They could do what they wanted to.
Yeah.
Right.
You and I walked up pretty close on that floor, Andrew, right? 2011, the last time they were there. Probably
about 10 rows back.
Right. Yeah, that was pretty damn close. I just grabbed Andrew. We're like, fuck it. Let's just go all the way up there. And we fucking got pretty far. It was pretty.
Not only that, we alternated going to get beers and shit like that.
Right. So we had a nice system.
We had a system going. Nice.
Yeah, we did. There was a little elbow. If I go up along this aisle and then get up there, then I'm out of here real quick.
Mm-hmm.
So it was that kind of cool. And
was everyone cool up there, or was it like a lot of elbowy?
Still cool. I mean, I would say because
you get closer really cool than that, anymore. Nick, it's very not cool.
Well, it's not anymore.
Get pretty angry.
Yeah, I will say when Kevin and I went up at Wrigley Field. I don't know, 2016, something like that. It was an absolute fucking knife fight. And it was we got to get the fuck out of here.
We've been holding these for 17 hours.
It's like, okay, wow. We'll walk 10
feet. But we weren't even that close.
Was that the year when we were at Wrigley with you on the first? And then we never...
And then you guys went up in the stands or something like that. Yeah, we ended up actually visiting. It was one of those nights. I don't know. So... All right. Well, I think that might wrap it up for the Music Challenge podcast. The thing is, we did not get half of our fish stories out tonight. So expect some more fish material in your future. And if you don't like it, then that's probably too bad for
you. Wait for the next podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. Listen to the next one after that. Yeah. Go to a different episode. And if you're here by this point, then you're obviously interested. So, the thing is, we have another studio album we want to review. I think we all have personal stories that we'd like to tell in depth. And, what else do you want to hear if you're a fish fan? I mean, you want to hear other people's experience with it. So, this is ours. So check it out, and thank you for listening to our take on A Live One, and we'll see you soon. Bye.
Peace, you guys. Y'all.
Bye-bye.